Today, answers matter more than ever before. That's why IBM is helping businesses manage customer questions with Watson Assistant. It's conversational AI designed to work for any industry. Let's put smart to work. Visit ibm.com/Watson Assistant.
All right, LA, appreciate you guys tuning in. We'll go till 9 o'clock tonight. Sitting here at home, like always, putting together the shows. Give you guys just a quick rundown of what we got going on. Jonathan Giovanni, who is part of ESPN, part of Draft Express. We'll get into that story. The Chinese Basketball League is delaying till at least July. So all the leagues, especially the NBA, is looking at what the CBA, Chinese Basketball Association, what they're going to do. So we'll have Jonathan on right around 7 o'clock. Kevin Safer, he is a part of ESPN.com as well. He's got a good article just in general about how this new draft is going to look, all the questions that come up with the NFL draft. Later in the week, we'll talk more about who the Rams are probably going to target, who the Chargers are going to target. But tonight, we'll spend time on how is this draft even going to happen? It's all being done, obviously, digitally, online. So I think there's a lot of curiosity to that. I want to start off the show. Clayton Kershaw was on Spectrum Sportsnet. So just like they have, obviously, the Laker channel, they got a Dodger channel there. Dodger channel there as well. John Harden. It's an interesting conversation. I want to just go up and read off the quote of the ace for the Los Angeles Dodgers, Clayton Kershaw. This is his thoughts on the idea, baseball's idea, from being home, being away from home for 4 months, just that quarantining that we've been talking about over these last couple of shows. And I know a lot of baseball people have been talking about all these ideas that they're throwing out there, the owners and the union. He says, well, I have two thoughts. One is I think it's great we're trying to figure something out. I will say that the situation that was played out, I don't know who wrote the article or where it came from. I just don't see that happening. I'm not going to be away from my family and not see them for 4 months. I just talked about how much Cooper, his newborn son, changes over 1 week. So to miss 4 months of his life right now, I'm just not going to do it. Ultimately, it's going to be a union decision. I can understand how someone maybe with no family that maybe it's their first few years would be okay with baseball being played. So this is what Kershaw's talking about. This is why, you know, frankly, I want to start off the show. I haven't really kind of thought about it too much. If let's say Major League Baseball came back, let's say baseball is slated to come back down the road and they find a solution. I don't think I've played out the scenario of players saying, nah, we're good. We don't like that idea. And I'm talking about the NBA. I'm talking about Major League Baseball. We'll see what happens. Maybe this is a similar scenario that plays out for football down the road. We'll see. Football's their start date's a lot further down the road, so they might, from a timing perspective, been able to avoid this in some shape, way, or form. The Kershaw part of it is interesting to me. The Kershaw part of it is here's a player, and his circumstance is a lot different than some of the other players out there. I think he's making $31 million this year. I think his deal was 3 years, $93 million. So Kershaw's in a much different financial position than a lot of other players. The idea that was being floated was 4 months, you play in Arizona. You use those spring training, I think 10 spring training fields that they have, plus Chase Field. There's 11 fields right there. What if a scenario played out where Major League Baseball found a solution, and they found a way, they worked with public officials, health officials, and they figured out, okay, this can work. And I know this won't come for, you know, probably another 60 days or so to get things figured out and to see if the country's got things under control in regards to COVID-19. But let's just say hypothetically, Kershaw is – he's not just, a utility player. Kershaw's the Dodgers ace. Now, I know a lot will make the argument, no, it's actually Walker Buehler. And Mace was just mentioning that, well, good thing they have a lot of depth as far as their rotation goes. David Price, you could kind of list off Urias. You could list off some of the different pitchers that the Dodgers have that they're going to obviously use this year. But Clayton Kershaw is obviously a humongous name for the Los Angeles Dodgers. I don't think I thought about, and I don't know where the leagues are on this, but this would be a completely different challenge. Is if you come up with an idea and there's a player like Kershaw, who, by the way, He's got a family, so it's not like Kershaw's 21 years old. It's not like he's able the ability to just kind of, all right, wherever I go, and if I have to be there for 4 months, no problem. He's in a completely different position than a lot of the other players out there. By the way, he's in a different position because of his finances, and he's also in a different position because of his family. And I mention all that is, what if he refuses to leave his family for that long stretch? That can happen. And I think you could also look at it the other way, and I think this was Mace was referencing to here. Like, I can see it from Kershaw's perspective to say, yes, we're trying to save a season. Yes, it's incredibly important to play as many games as we can in baseball. And whether that's going to be 100 games, whether that's going to be 140 games, whether that's going to be 80 games, I don't know what that total is. And we'll wait to see what eventually happens. Of course, it's important. All these leagues, at the end of the day, as much of a fan as I am of the Los Angeles Lakers, or as much of a fan you are of the Los Angeles Dodgers, or maybe you're an SC alum, or you know, you will do everything to watch UCLA basketball, whatever the case is, right? Whatever local team that you cheer for, these are businesses. And what they're trying to figure out at this stage is, how can we stop the bleeding? How can we stop where we're sitting right now, where each one of our leagues, there's no longer games as far as just people walking into Dodger Stadium paying for parking and then going to the concessions. By the way, the tickets that they have to spend just to get inside a Dodger Stadium, the merchandising that comes with it, the TV revenue that comes from the networks. There is so much money being lost right now from each one of these sports entities. And you could start it from the top, where it's the actual league, the NFL, Major League Baseball, NBA, or you can kind of start trickling it down and say, okay, now it's each ownership, the Dodgers ownership or the Lakers ownership, whatever the case is. They are trying to find every possible way to hire their employees again, get people in the stands, figure out a way to play their season. If there's no fans in the stands, no problem. I don't think it dawned on me to think of players this caliber of a Clayton Kershaw saying, cool, you guys come up with a solution. And if that solution is 4 months in Phoenix, I'm going to be with my family because it's impossible that I'm going to leave them for 4 months. And I know that, you know, maybe there's other details that can get figured out, and maybe there are ways where they're not there for just 4 months. But that was one of the ideas that was thrown. That was one of the initial plans that was thrown out there. At the same time, I can see fans and other players saying, no, we need baseball. Baseball is incredibly important to millions of people across the country or millions of people across the world. We're all, I think we've used this example a few different times. We all sit here today under this climate, and sports has always been that getaway. Whatever was going on in your personal life, whatever's going on at work, whatever's going on at home, sports has always been that thing that you can go to. And you know, today there is none of that. And none of the leagues are playing right now. Playoffs would have started this weekend for Lakers. Hadn't been to the playoffs in 6 years. How exciting would that have been? Dodgers, favorites to win the World Series, them and Yankees going back and forth, 1-2. I think there are going to be players out there that make it a family decision, that say to themselves, I got to be with my family for this period of time. But I think there's also going to be a ton of other players and a ton of fans that are hoping and praying that players like Kershaw find a way to say, okay, you know what? I will be a part of this 4 month quarantine in Arizona because whatever the reasons are, right? You want to give fans baseball again. You want other teammates of yours who aren't making the type of money Clayton Kershaw is, or haven't made the type of money Clayton Kershaw has made, you know, throughout his career. There's that understanding as well. You could look at it both ways. And I'm not here to, you know, say one way or the other. Family always comes first, period. You know, I don't care what it is you do. I don't care what your profession is. Family always comes first. I do this show right now. If something happened with my family, I'm out. You know, like I got to go take care of that. And I think most people are like that. But I think this is it kind of raises an interesting question. And I'll throw it out to Dodger fans out there, or just fans in general. Phone number is 877-710-ESPN. would you be upset at players that don't want to quarantine for an extended period of time? Would you be upset just in the fact that that could affect a solution and all we've had is problems this entire time? And try and look at it as well from Kershaw's perspective. I sent out a tweet earlier today. So I got some tweets that I want to read out at Alan Sliwa, A-L-L-E-N-S-L-I-W-A. And then if you want to be a part of the show, call in at 877-710-ESPN. Would you be upset at players that don't want to be a part of that quarantine for an extended period of time? And that could be in the NBA. That could be in Major League Baseball. It could be in other sports. We'll do that coming up next. Stay right here. This is the Sliwa Show on 710 ESPN. All right, so we're talking about Kershaw. And look, this is a tough subject, I think, for a lot of people. Because from a fan perspective, we're just trying to, hey, can we get games back? How great would it be to have games back? We're all sitting. They moved up that documentary, The Last Dance. It's moved up to this weekend, where initially it was back in July. So there's incredible opportunity from a content perspective because everybody's home right now. But Kershaw, I'm gonna just kind of sum up what Kershaw said. He said that, I don't know who wrote the article. He's talking about just ideas that are being thrown out there for baseball. Jeff Passan had something last week, and then this came out recently. I just don't see that happening. I'm not going to be away from my family and not see them for 4 months. That's kind of the in a nutshell, that's what Kershaw is, you know, he's emphasizing, and he's in a different circumstance than a lot of these other players. And I put that up there, and the reason why I say he's in a much different circumstance, he is. I mean, that he makes $31 million this year. He's on a three-year deal, I want to say $93 million, something along those lines. So his circumstance is different. I'm going to read off a couple tweets that I got. At Lakers Rebuilt, I'm sure it depends on their contract size. That's fair, too. He's good financially. And I think when somebody makes that point, I don't want it to be lost that somebody is trying to make the point, or I'm making the point. When I throw out how much money he's making, I don't want that to be looked at as, oh, well, all he cares about is the money. No, no, no. What I'm referring to there is he's financially taken care of. He's already taken care of his family. Like, his family is going to be good to go for generations. That's how great of a player Clayton Kershaw has been over the years. And he's earned every one of those dollars that he's made. But what happens if some players want to play and others don't? You know, what do you do then? Because I'm sure there are a ton of players that are ready to go. If that green light comes up, maybe it comes up in 60 days. Maybe it comes up in 90 days. Maybe a decision is made in 30 days of what baseball is going to do and that it's safe to play. By the way, another scenario that can play out is there's no baseball in you know, 2020 and just call it a year. That could happen. If that happens, then there's that trickle effect, and that means probably no NBA, no football. Let's hope that we're not in that scenario. And but it could happen. I'll read off another tweet. By the way, 877-710-ESPN. Would you be upset if players don't want to quarantine for an extended period of time? Because that could be another challenge for these leagues that, frankly, we've never really talked about. That hasn't been a conversation that we've gotten into. DD Page 36 says, we already know that NBA players would play. Jason Tatum did an interview with ESPN about 4 days ago and already revealed that players that he has talked to want to compete the season as long as it's medically safe. Everybody, you know, keeping in their mind safety, they're trying to be as conscious as possible. Dre Day says, and then one more that I got here, at Raining Threes All Day, if they are pressed to make a decision, what option do they have? Not play and not get paid, plus let your teammates down? Kershaw might feel that way, but if the players' union signs off on it, he's likely going, liking it or not. I don't have an answer to it, but what I will tell you is that's not something I guess I was thinking about from a player perspective of them saying to themselves, no, that quarantine, that idea that you have of if it's Vegas for NBA players or if it's Arizona for Major League Baseball players, they are going to be – it's going to completely have to be some type of a quarantine. They're not going to have the ability to – go walk around and hang out or go to restaurants or things along those lines. It's probably just going to be work, hotel, and that's it. And I'm sure there's going to be all these safety measures that comes with it. MLB Commissioner Rob Manfred, he was on with Mornings with Marie on Fox Business Channel. This is we don't get to hear from Manfred too often. So, and anytime any of these commissioners talk right now, you're trying to get, you know, at least try and look to see what's going on in their mind about their league and what they think is coming in the near future, whatever the case is. He basically said in a nutshell, and I want to play this here real quick. Curtis will handle that. Baseball will only be played if it's safe and the public is healthy. Here's Rob Manfred on Fox Business a little bit earlier today.
Well, most important, the only decision that we've made, the only real plan that we have, is that baseball is not going to return until the public health situation has improved to the point that we're comfortable that we can play games in a manner that's safe for our players, our employees, our fans, and in a way that will not impact the public health situation adversely. So right now, it's largely a waiting game. During that period, as you might expect any business would, we have engaged in, contingency planning. We've thought about how we might be able to return in various scenarios. But again, the key is the improvement in the public health situation.
All the leagues are in a similar spot. All the leagues, this is what they're going to have to wait on. Jess, we were just looking at something, and Ireland mentioned as well. I know we were reading a little bit off the air. So golf, if I'm correct here, PGA Tour officials expected to announce this week their intention to resume the tour season halted due to the COVID-19 pandemic on June 11th to the 14th at the Charles Schwab Challenge. You know, Jess, I mentioned this off air. If there's one thing that golf has an advantage over some of these other sports, there's kind of a way to social distance in golf where you don't have that luxury with some of these other sports. Look, you don't have it in baseball. You don't have it in basketball. And you definitely don't have it in the NFL.
I mean, yeah, golf, you just need, I mean, the caddy and the golfer. I mean, even then you can probably get away with not having the caddy. But you just need the one golf there and swing. You just kind of stagger all the tee times. So, you know, mm-hmm. Some will have to go early in the morning. Some will go a little bit later in the morning. But if it's very easy to do for golf because it's not, you know, a big team sport. It's just kind of, you know, the one-on-one battles.
I'm going to play one more from Rob Manfred. This was the Arizona idea. But on the golf side of things, it seems like it's a lot less complicated to figure something out and make it work. That's not to say they're not going to have their complications and travel and everything else. But literally, you know, for all those who listen and are golfers, and I'm not a golfer, but I've definitely golfed, everyone can be in their own cart. Or actually, no, they're not going to be in their cart. They're not doing that. But everybody could just have their space. Like their caddy, you can be 6 feet apart and have a conversation, no problem. There is no one-on-one competition where somebody's playing defense on the other guy. So if there is one sport that kind of has a little bit of an advantage, it's golf. But I will tell you, I'm surprised to read that today. That wasn't something that I was expecting, especially I'm going to have Jonathan Givani on in a few minutes, who's going to talk about the Chinese Basketball Association. It's a surprise because of that. There was other news going on in the world where it looks like sports is going to get delayed a little bit more. But before we do that, Rob Manfred on the plan to be in Arizona, if that's something that is real, or is that just one of the ideas being thrown around?
We have a variety of contingency plans that we have talked about and worked on. Plans may be too strong a word. Ideas may be your word, maybe a better word. But all of them are designed to address limitations that may exist when businesses restart, travel limitations, limitations on mass gatherings that may still exist. And we've thought about ways to try to make baseball available to all the fans across the United States in the face of those restrictions. So from our perspective, we don't have a plan. We have lots of ideas. What ideas come to fruition will depend on what the restrictions are, what the public health situation is. But we are intent on the idea of trying to make baseball part of the recovery, the economic recovery, and sort of a milestone on the return to normalcy.
Jess, you know, it'd be great if we can find somebody from a business perspective that has laid out, I wonder, I'm just, I'm so curious to know what all the leagues, just what they're, I don't want to say as bluntly as this, but what they're losing, right? Like, just by not having games, what is those, what are those financial implications? Maybe we could find like a, you know, some a CNBC or some money guy that knows exactly what each one of these leagues are missing, because Manfred, who was on Fox Business, referred to, you know, this is an incredibly tough situation, not just for them, but for all the leagues. But I think that'd be a fascinating conversation.
Oh, definitely. I can. I'll dig deep into my my phone book and I'll find someone.
There you go. There you go. Okay, let's do this. I mentioned this. Jonathan Giovanni, Chinese Basketball Association postpones restart to at least July. So that was a story that came out a little bit earlier today. Let's hear from him. Let's get his thoughts on what's the latest in China, how that can potentially have an effect on the NBA, how the NBA is looking at what's going on in China and how much they're trying to learn from that predicament and that situation. Remember, they were planning on starting April 15th, I think it was. And this was, you know, a couple weeks ago or so. And they've been canceled since January 24th. So they're, you know, about 2 months behind the NBA. So we'll definitely hit Jonathan on that. We'll do that coming up next. Stay right here. This is the Sliwa Show on 710 ESPN. Hi, welcome back to the Sliwa Show. Jonathan Giovanni, Chinese basketball postpones restart until at least July. Jonathan's got a great article right now on ESPN. Jonathan, thanks for joining the show, man. How are you?
I'm doing great. Thanks for having me.
Well, listen, the moment I saw this, and I know you've come on the show before, and we're all kind of, there's a curiosity to see what the Chinese Basketball Association is doing. I know baseball is watching closely, what South Korea is doing, Japan. So we're all kind of seeing what's happening in other parts of the world, obviously because of the effects of COVID-19. So can you give us the latest with the Chinese Basketball Association and what exactly is going on there?
So they haven't been playing basketball since January 24th. Remember, Rudy Gobert tested positive on March 12th. So they're almost 2 months in front of us on this. They had several times postponed their season initially to the beginning of April, then middle of April, and then to May. But overnight, Chinese Basketball Association teams met and decided that they're going to postpone their season until at least July 1st. They're going to meet in another month from now, and they're going to see if they can convince the government to let them play, because it's the government right now who is pulling back the rope and saying, no, we're not ready for sporting gatherings now. The entire world is watching. We can't have an embarrassing situation where we start playing and then we have to stop. It's going to make us look bad. So they are not, you know, they have no clearance whatsoever. The CBA is saying, let's push this back to July, and maybe by then things will be good enough where we can resume games without fans in attendance.
So that's interesting. So this isn't even with fans. This is just in general. What do you think changed? And I know some of the things that you just mentioned right there, but does the Chinese government, it sounds like, they just don't feel comfortable with even just the players? Because it's not, if the idea was they're going to restart it, I remember you even mentioning this a little bit ago, April 15th was kind of a target date. I know that even before that, there was a date that was pushed back, but this is now, you know, we're not even going to explore it. The earliest would be July 1st. Number one, were you surprised by the news? And number two, what do you think changed?
Well, I think it's, you know, it's coming from the highest levels of the Chinese government. It's the general administration of sports. And it's not just about basketball. It's also their soccer league, which is very high profile, has some top players, international players. One of those players came back to China, tested positive for COVID-19. And so there's just a lot of concern about, how are they going to be able to contain this virus? And, you know, I don't think that they can afford to risk restarting the league. Someone contracts the virus, they have to stop it. It's going to be an international incident. And so I just don't think that the Chinese government is ready for mass gatherings yet. And, you know, it's not a great sign for us here in the U.S. because, you know, the steps that they took to contain this virus were 100 times, you know, more powerful, more stringent than what we did. You know, they locked down entire territories. You know, they were testing people everywhere they went. They were separating people from their families. You know, they did things that we didn't even come close to doing. So if they can't play basketball 4 months after that, then, you know, what hope is there for the NBA to play anytime soon? But, you know, there's still a lot of time for all that to get figured out. The NBA is going to give this another 3 or 4 weeks, it looks like, and then they'll see where we are. But, you know, if China is any indication, there's not a lot of room to be optimistic on our end.
All right, I just gathered about 30 questions in my head as you delivered that right there. Okay, one of the questions I'll ask is this. So the NBA's stance on all this has been, if I'm correct here, they're not going to make any decision on anything until after May 1st, correct?
Yes.
And that's not that's just kind of a set. There's no reason to make any decisions before then, just because, you know, I think Adam Silver has, if there's one thing that Silver has done every time that he's had any type of statement, as much as he talks about, of course, he'd love to crown a champion this year and everything else, he just, I think, has continued to say, we just don't have enough information, you know what I mean, to have any information to kind of pass on to sports fans or the leagues or anything like that. The other question is this, and I've mentioned this before, I think it's, you know, in a sense, it's fascinating what you said about the Chinese government. The world is watching to see some of the things they do, because they're not just 2.5 months ahead from a basketball perspective. They're just ahead in the case of they had COVID-19 first and everybody else kind of came after. Not wanting to make a mistake, that stands out to me, because when you say the world is watching and they want to make sure that if they do get back to sports, they have to be as careful as possible, not just sports, concerts, or let's just say getting back to having regular events. They have to be more cautious than, you know, anybody, simply because, like you mentioned, Jonathan, you almost can't get this one wrong. You know what I mean?
Yeah, absolutely. And I think it makes a lot of sense. You know, there's so much going on right now in the world with people dying, people losing their jobs, people are sick. You know, the resources need to be put in the right place, and sports needs to be put in the right perspective. And so I understand this move, and I think Adam Silver and the NBA, they're going to be patient with this, and they're going to make sure that if they do bring the NBA back, it's for the right reasons and it's at the right time.
Do you think Jonathan Givony, did I pronounce that right? Givony? I have to do my best to do it. It's got a great article right now. Chinese basketball postpones restart until at least July. That's on ESPN.com. Jonathan, do you think it's more important for the NBA right now to find a way to finish this season or make sure next season is not heavily affected?
Well, I mean, I think both is important. You know, I mean, next season you can control the date of that a little bit better. You know, if you push it back to December, it's probably not the end of the world. This season is very important. I mean, you can't just take $1 billion and flush it down the toilet and not worry about it. You know, it's going to have really wide ranging ramifications, not finishing out the regular season and not conducting the playoffs. And so I do think they're going to exhaust every possibility before they do ultimately decide to cancel the season. So yeah, I mean, I think both are really important, and you know, I don't see one conflicting with the other right now.
Did you see Clayton Kershaw's comments on the local network here in LA, Spectrum Sportsnet? Did you see those comments? If you haven't, I'll read them to you, but did you get a chance to read them or not?
No.
Because I want to tie this back to basketball. So Clayton Kershaw, in essence, basically said that if Major League Baseball, I'm not going to be away from my family and not see them for 4 months. I just talked about how much Cooper, this is his newborn son, changes from week to week. So to miss 4 months of his life right now, I'm just not going to do it. The reason why I read that to you is because most of these leagues are trying to find a way where they can have one location, have everybody there, have them separated, of course, from their families and so forth. Have you heard of any players that have, or you think we're just kind of too early in this process? Have you heard of any players from the NBA perspective kind of voicing some similar concerns that if they did do it all, let's say, in Vegas, and it was this tournament, anything along those lines, to be away from family is not something that they'd be interested in doing?
I haven't, you know, but I mean, I understand his point of view, and, you know, I have two kids myself, and being away from them for 4 months would be really difficult, you know, but there's a lot of money on the line too, you know, so if you decide not to play, that's cool. But, you know, there are a lot of players who, you know, their shelf life to play professional basketball is really, really small. And so if for them to lose, you know, half a season's wages or, you know, 20% of their salary, I mean, that's something that is going to be really difficult for them. And so that's why, you know, talking to some of these American players that are over in China right now, I asked them, why did you decide to go back? Weren't you concerned for your safety? They said, yeah, I'm very concerned, but you know, I have 9 or 10 years here to make as much money as I can before I retire. Mm-hmm. And every cent that's in my bank account at that point, that's the bulk of what I'm going to make for the rest of my career. You know, they say one season for me, I mean, that's like 10 years of working for a normal person in a regular field. And so, you know, from that perspective, I understand their point of view too. And so when these guys in Americans in China right now, they're going to play this out. You know, they're not leaving as long as their paychecks are coming. Some of these guys are making $200,000, $300,000, $400,000 a month. I was talking to one of the more high profile guys today. He said, this is not a time to be passing up paychecks right now. The world is hurting. People are getting laid off left and right. It would be irresponsible for me to just go home, you know, self quarantine and, you know, and forget about basketball, because where am I going to play next season? You know, if I burn this here in China, where is my other destination? You know, European basketball is going to be a dumpster fire next year because their economies are destroyed. And so, and I'm not an NBA player anymore. So, well, what's next for me? And so, you know, from that aspect, that's pretty powerful. You know, I mean, there's a reality here. Some people have made enough money where maybe they don't have to worry about the rest of the season. Some guys haven't.
Well, and John, I think that's kind of that's the part that's going to be interesting, because let's say ideas do come out for Major League Baseball or they come out for the NBA and there is potential to finish off the season, or start a season in the sense for Major League Baseball. And then there are certain players out there saying, no, that's not going to work for me. There's going to be some major decisions to be made. And that could happen in the NBA. I mean, it's not out of the ordinary, right? One of the points Kershaw made was he's got a family. So it's different for him. He's got a newborn. He's got a few kids, where some of these other athletes, let's just say hypothetically, they don't have a family yet. So it's not as big of a deal for them to be gone for 3-4 months or whatever the case is. So we'll kind of see.
Make a minimum salary. You know, maybe 100%. They're not Clayton Kershaw, who makes $30 million a year. You know,
100%.
He's got a nice little nest egg already. Mm-hmm. The guy that's on a minimum salary in the NBA, you know, he's paycheck to paycheck in many ways. I mean, yeah, he makes $1 million, but half of that goes to taxes right off the bat. And then another, you know, 5% goes to his agent, you know, and so they're really, and they, you have to live a certain lifestyle, you know, if you're a professional basketball player. And so there isn't, you know, that's really daunting once those paychecks stop coming. And so, I mean, all these guys are in different boats, you know. I mean, I think that the minimum salary players in Major League Baseball are going to have a different opinion than, you know, someone who makes $30 million a year, I would guess.
Jonathan Giovanni from ESPN.com joining the Sliwa Show. John, the final question for you. What did you think yesterday, Brian Windhorst, and I think Adrian Wojnarowski, and you might have even been a part of this as well. One of the ideas being floated around was this 25-day plan, where if we get to this moment, it's 11 days of all these players working out individually, and then a 14-day, two-week training camp before, you know, we get back on it. And I know it's premature to say all this stuff, because I feel like every time ideas are thrown out there, the leagues just aren't ready to act on anything, because the world's not ready to act on anything. In general, what did you think of that concept?
I mean, it makes a lot of sense. They spoke to the experts in the field. They spoke to the physical trainers. They spoke to the physiotherapists. They spoke to the, you know, NBA general managers. They spoke to players. And so those are the people that know, you know, the human body better than someone like me. I mean, if those guys sign off on that, then I think that's the way to go. I'm just concerned that, you know, we're a long way off from reaching that point where we're ready to activate those plans. I mean, it makes sense to talk about them now, though.
No, I agree. And every time that, you know, you hop on and you provide just this information in general, kind of give us our updates and let us know what's going on in the world as far as the Chinese Basketball Association, I know our listeners appreciate it. So thank you for taking some time and joining the show.
Thanks for having me.
Great stuff, as always, from Jonathan right there. When we come back, I don't know if you guys got a chance to see this. So let's continue with the NBA. We do know that The Last Dance is coming up. That documentary is coming up this weekend. So there's going to be a lot of hype leading up to it. You guys hear what Bill Laimbeer had to say about the greatest player of all time? The GOAT, the greatest player of all time. Bill Laimbeer was on First Take. I want to play that when we come back. Stay right here. This is the Sliwa Show on 710 ESPN.
Geico gets you access to licensed agents 24/7, which means that Geico is always there for you. If only everyone was always there for you. Like your mom, when you fill out really, really important paperwork on the first day of a new job.
Name, check. Birthday, Social Security, is that a thing? Hey, mom, what is my Social Security number? Mom? Okay, let's guess. 0017. Oh, Gemini. Hashtag done.
Geico, always there for you with savings and 24/7 access to licensed agents.
Want to be a part of the Sliwa Show, 877-710-ESPN. Twitter, at Alan Sliwa. Appreciate Jonathan Givani hopping on the show. Here's the thing. So it's one of those where I go back and forth. You know, I'm optimistic, I'm pessimistic. I'm optimistic, I'm pessimistic. And that's – I'm not trying to be either, but I think that was a blow today, you know, to hear that the Chinese Basketball Association postponing till July – I guess I just didn't see that coming. You know, I think most of the conversations that we had heard over the last, let's say, week or so, not to say that there was growing optimism that, oh, no question about it, the NBA is on board. But, you know, I've heard Mark Cuban throw out the date of June. We've listened to some different scenarios that can play out there. And I know none of them, there's nothing in stone right now, just simply because you can't have anything in stone. But that one today was... That was a shock to me because I did not think that the Chinese Basketball Association, this is dictated by the government there, I didn't think they'd be postponing things that far out. I mean, if they're postponing all the way out to July and we are about a month and a half, almost a month into 3 weeks after the Chinese Basketball Association postponed their league, you know, that puts you at starting the getting NBA back in what? August, mid-August, like I don't think that's going to happen. Now, things can change, and they're changing day-by-day basis. New information comes out, but that part is surprising to me. And then, you know, you heard Jonathan also talking about as far as how much pushback players could potentially have on the quarantine idea. I was mentioning Kershaw a little bit earlier. And he was actually pretty adamant. I didn't expect him to kind of get that much into it, saying, well, you know, there's a lot of players that are not in the position that Kershaw's in. And it's not just Kershaw. I'm not trying to single out just Kershaw. And I'm not saying Kershaw's comments are right or wrong. I'm just saying that players are going to look at this quarantine and say, we like the idea. We don't like the idea. No, I'm not going to be away from my family for 4 months. I don't care how much you try to pay me. That can happen. But eventually... if the position on the baseball side of things or the NBA side of things is you are in a position to have a season, it's a very interesting obstacle that the leagues might have to face that I never even thought of 2 weeks ago, 3 weeks ago, a week ago. I thought they were all just like, yeah, well, if we're going to get paid, of course, let's get as many games as we can in now. But maybe that's not the case. Curtis, you surprised by that when I read that Kershaw quote, were you surprised that predicament? Just players out there that say, nah, if that's the case, don't sign me up for it.
I guess the situation doesn't surprise me because, in all honesty, we talked about this. None of us know anything. But mm-hmm. the fact that Kershaw came out to and said that, you know, we don't hear from him a lot unless it's kind of important. Mm-hmm. So you know that it's not just him that feels that way. But you also can't force, you know, you can't force anyone to come back if they don't want to, you know?
Yeah, and I mean, listen, there'd be an incredible amount of money that he'd obviously leave on the table if that scenario plays out. How about, Jess, you think from a fan perspective, like, do you think fans would look at players different if there are fans out there that say, or if there are players out there that say, we love the fans, we love the sport, but, you know, I got to take care of my family, and taking care of my family for 4 months and not quarantining, like, that's fine, I'll do it, but I'm not going to quarantine. And do you think there are fans out there that would look at some of these players a little bit different and be like, no, we need that player, and I'm not going to just isolate Kershaw. It could be a player in the NBA, it could be a player in baseball.
I mean, it's so tough to really hold a grudge against any player who chooses to, you know, not be quarantined for X amount of months just because it's away from the family. Mm-hmm. I mean, I come from a Latino family. I know the importance of family. Mm-hmm. So as a fan, it sucks. But, you know, as a person, I get it. And, like, you know, I wouldn't hold him accountable. You know, that's one other thing that's great about sports is when one person steps down or gets hurt or there's something that happens, there's other people that have to step up. And, you know, if it goes down to him choosing not to do this plan, if it does go into effect, then, you know, it's going to be the next person up for the Dodgers and for Kershaw. You know, just be safe and, you know, that's it. That's all you can really do. It's really hard to hold a grudge on something like that.
Yeah, and I think, like, and I'm with you too. It's not from a grudge perspective. I don't think anybody can hold a grudge. Here's the only thing I think somebody would hold a grudge if it's maybe like a ton of players that say, okay, I know we're set up to play, but no, we're not going to do it. And there's, I'm going to just throw a number out, like 20% of the players or something along those lines. There might be definitely fans saying, no, the country needs baseball back. Or it's not like if the scenario doesn't play out where it's, okay, well, if you don't want to play, that's fine. We're still going to play. If the scenario played out, it was, well, there's too many players that don't want to do it. Now we can't play. Maybe in that circumstance. Randall in Alhambra, appreciate you calling in, bud. Go ahead. What's your thoughts on this?
Okay, yeah. I understand Clayton Kershaw's frustrations, but I'm from the old school. I said, you sign that contract, you have to honor it. We're all in a situation where we have to make sacrifices and all that and stuff. So I say he has to honor the contract, man. And, you know, I think if push comes to shove, maybe he can bring his family out to Arizona to rent a house and maybe quarantine them in there, because I see doctors standing in trailers in their driveways when they get off work from the hospital so they can be close to their families. So, you know, those are doctors. So he's making $30 million a year. He can bring his family out to Arizona if Major League Baseball does that, you know, if they go through this. And one more question before I go.
Go ahead.
If all the players, if MLB does this and the players start revolting, are these players, can they be in breach of contract? Can they be, you know, suspended or fined by the teams, individual teams, if they go through with this?
I don't think, and listen, I'll say this. Let me preface. And Randall, I appreciate you calling into the show. Of course, nothing in stone, right? Like, we're just throwing – baseball's lobbing out ideas. NBA's lobbing out ideas. They're going to see if one of these stick. But really, there's nothing to stick right now because you're still a ways away from ever being clear to play baseball again or play the rest of the NBA season. I don't think they can no player I don't think would be in breach of their contract. I say that because of the circumstances, right? I mean, that contract also probably said 162 games. That contract probably said season was going to start March 26th. So I don't think that's going to be the case for any of these players. I think it's just a legitimate question. Like, I think it's just a fair question to ask if some of these players, you know, don't want to go and under the circumstances – if the league got to a point where you can actually have a season, like this is it, you can actually have a season, and some players say, no, I'm good with it, I don't think there could be any penalties or anything along those lines. What I think can happen is they don't make their money for the year. You know, they don't make, if 100 games gets approved by the by Major League Baseball, and it's a prorated 100 games or whatever the case is, and by the way, it can't even be prorated. I mean, a lot of the revenue's coming in from fans going in through the stands. So it's a complicated issue. One thing that's not complicated, this Sunday, The Last Dance will be coming on. And The Last Dance is the Chicago Bulls documentary. And it's their 97-98 season. Jordan wins his final title with Scottie Pippen and Steve Kerr and Phil Jackson and Dennis Rodman. You go down the list of you know, one of the greatest basketball teams of all time. When we come back, I want to talk about what Bill Laimbeer said on First Take. Plus, if you're going to watch that show this weekend, can you do me a favor? Can you also watch me and Sedano afterwards on the ESPN Los Angeles Twitter account on Periscope? We're going to do a little post-game action on there, just some kind of commentary on the documentary. We're going to do it for all of them. It's a 10-part series. There is two that play every Sunday for the next 5 weeks. So George and I will do it after each one of these. I have no idea how it's going to work. I have no idea how it's going to look. But we are very appreciative. Sincoro Tequila, Coors Light hopping on, and they're being a part of it from a partnership standpoint. So when we come back, I'll play what Bill Laimbeer said about the greatest player of all time. Stay right here. This is the Sliwa Show on 710 ESPN. All right, everybody remembers Bill Laimbeer of the Detroit Pistons. Back in the day, the Bad Boys. That was a Pistons team. I know there's a lot of Laker fans that listen to this show, and or they're driving around Southern California, whatever the case is. We remember those Piston teams. Isaiah Thomas, Joe Dumars, Bill Laimbeer, Dennis Rodman was on that team. And they were successful. The Pistons had a great run. Every team had their opportunity in that like 80s and 90s before the Bulls took over. But you had the Celtics winning. By the way, you had Philly winning. You had Boston winning. You had the Lakers obviously taking control of things in the 80s. Then the Detroit Pistons got their run. Bill Laimbeer, who was known as being, you know, arguably one of the more dirty players in the NBA, would stand up and fight anybody, just really didn't care. And that was kind of the style of the NBA back in the days. I will say this, that Pistons team had beat the Bulls. That Pistons team had also lost to the Bulls. He was on First Take a little bit earlier today. They're talking about, obviously, this documentary coming out. The Last Dance comes out this Sunday. Quick reminder, it's on from 6 to 8. Sedano and I will hop on at ESPN Los Angeles. We'll do a little post-conversation about it. But Bill Laimbeer on First Take, the conversation came up, greatest player of all time. Here's Bill Laimbeer's take.
I'm very vocal. I think LeBron is the best player that's ever played the game. He's 6'8", 285 pounds, runs like the wind and jumps out of the gym. And but more importantly, when he came in the league from day one, he knew how to involve his teammates to win. And that's something that Jordan had to learn for a long time. Now, if you go by championships, obviously Michael Jordan has more championships. But I think LeBron in any generation would be doing what he's doing right now all these years. And I think he, at the end of the day, I firmly believe that he's the best basketball player in the history of the game.
All right, LA, I'll present this question. Who do you think is the greatest player of all time? And I'm not one, I'm not crazy about doing these because I think there's so many different eras and there's so many different styles of basketball. And hell, we're here in Los Angeles. We know all the greats that have worn the purple and gold. Kobe, Magic, Kareem, Shaq, you know, go down the list. Wilt Chamberlain, Jerry West, Pau Gasol. I mean, there's a number of legends that have been a part of the Los Angeles Lakers. And right now, we got two of them, by the way. LeBron, legend. Anthony Davis, hopefully, will be a player that down the road's got a couple championships with the Lakers. But when the conversation comes up with greatest player of all time, 877-710-ESPN, if you want to weigh in on this. You guys know I love me some LeBron James. And you guys know, and I think a lot of people would agree with this, when we talk about LeBron, just his career, everything that LeBron has accomplished in his career, his three NBA championships, I think was, you know, on the path to potentially winning another chip with his third different team And probably, you know, if Lakers did win an NBA championship, he would be the first player, if he got finals MVP, to win three championships with three different teams and three finals MVPs. LeBron James is just, he's a freak. Nobody can kind of describe what kind of player he is. I always try and compare him to Magic. That's the comparison I make. I always say, let's not compare LeBron to Michael Jordan. That's an awful comparison. Compare Kobe to Michael. They were both, they played the game stylistically. It was much more similar. Magic and LeBron are a much better comp. The difference with LeBron, he was jumping through the gym, and you know, defensively he was better when he was younger. Nobody had the vision that Magic Johnson had in the history of the NBA. I think he's the greatest passer, and greatest setup man. But we know how just amazing LeBron James is. The greatest player of all time is Michael Jordan. It's kind of funny to me when we have these conversations. And if you look back at Michael Jordan, and this is what's going to be so great about Sunday's documentary. When you look back at Michael Jordan, the guy won three NBA championships, took 2 years off, came back in the NBA, and won three more NBA championships. The laundry list of players that never won a championship because of Michael Jordan is pretty damn long. And a lot of them are Hall of Famers, or they were on that dream team. Whether it was John Stockton, or it was Karl Malone, or it was Charles Barkley, you kind of go down the list. Sean Kemp didn't get a ring. Clyde Drexler didn't get a ring. Patrick Ewing didn't get one. We could go, you know, look at the Eastern Conference. You could look at the Western Conference. Michael Jordan won six NBA championships in six tries. Michael Jordan has six finals MVPs. Michael Jordan did it against, you know, what was probably the best era or the greatest competition of basketball that era. What I'm referring to is he got some of those guys in the 80s, got them in the 90s. Granted, a lot of those guys in the 80s, they were ready to turn the page. By the time Lakers and Magic Johnson played the Bulls, that page was already turned. Kareem wasn't there. These guys weren't in their prime anymore. But when that conversation comes up, I'm always curious the ones that make an argument that it's not Michael Jordan. And the first thing that I thought of when I saw that it was Bill Laimbeer, I just thought in my head, because he's a Detroit Piston. You know, that's one of those players. That's one of those players that will never give credit where probably credit's due when it comes to Michael Jordan and when it comes to the Chicago Bulls. E. Laker Raider says Jordan was unstoppable and much stronger than he looks and weighs. Abel Guzman says you cannot compare the two very different games. Jordan game was held back by the triangle offense. LeBron has the ball in his hands 90% of the time. Both are incredible players, but only one was really unstoppable and wanted to embarrass you. I'm assuming what he's talking about is Jordan there. I know we can, you know, a lot of these conversations can be had and it makes for fun conversation. But the greatest of all time, and I can't go back. I can't go back. I'll take some of your guys' phone calls in just a second here. 877-710-ESPN if you want to be a part of the Sliwa show. I can't go back and tell you that I watched Wilt Chamberlain and I knew what Wilt Chamberlain did. I can't go back and say Bill Russell or Kareem or some of these other greats that are considered some of the all-time greats to ever play the game. I can't go back that far. I can't. So all I can do is just talk about what I saw and what most people say. For me, the greatest of all time is Michael Jordan, and I'm sure others will have different opinions, but his resume, there's something about that resume too that speaks for itself. Those six championships, 6-for-6 in the finals, and six finals MVPs, damn, do you really have to say more than that? Jim in Anaheim, you're on the Sliwa Show. Go ahead, Jim.
Well, first of all, it's a pleasure. I've been listening to your show for the last couple months, and I really enjoy your take on basketball. My problem is, it's kind of a hard thing to say because I'm actually a Spurs fan. But the thing with LeBron is he could easily be 2-9 in the finals, you know, because if it wasn't for Ray Allen's shot, Tim Duncan would have six rings, you know. And then if you look
what is he right now? He's 3-5 or 3-6?
He's 3-6. So he could actually 3-6. Yeah, so he could have been 2-7 actually. Mm-hmm. You know, if it wasn't for Ray Allen's shot. So my other problem was with, because I'm almost 60 years old. Mm-hmm. And so I remember the Magic and the Birds, the Dr. J's. So those are all fresh because I was already a grown up by then. You know, I met Jerry West in 71 as a kid, on 72 actually. So I've been listening to basketball or watching basketball since about 1970. So my problem with Jordan though, and this was, I had this argument with an old roommate back in the late 90s or mid 90s, right after they won the 73 and 72 and 10 season.
Mm-hmm.
I was telling her that, well, you know what, because she was a basketball player for Fullerton College. Mm-hmm. And I kept telling her, I said, well, you know, the problem with Jordan is he's always played against soft competition, and it's not because of, it's not his fault, it's his
era. Jim, yeah. I want to take a couple more calls, but I appreciate you calling in. Robin Redondo, you're on the Sleeper Show. Go ahead, Rob.
I'm going with Kareem. If you talk to 100 people, probably mm-hmm. 2 or 3 will say Kareem. He is the all-time leading scorer, right?
Mm-hmm.
And he did revolutionize the game with the skyhook, and I'm not as knowledgeable as you are. But you
might have knowledge on Kareem that I don't have, because that wasn't my era, you know? And I will say this, Michael Thompson says it a lot that he thinks – you know, Kareem Abdul-Jabbar definitely is in that conversation. So, and this is a player that played against some amazing players, the Birds, the McHales, he played with Kareem, he played against Jordan. So I don't think you're far off to say Kareem. I don't have that. Kareem has 6 championships, you know, and I just don't have that touch with Kareem the way maybe somebody like you would.
And I think, I'm 68 years old, and mm-hmm. Nobody will deny, come on, he was the greatest college basketball player of all time, right?
Ireland reminds me of that every time we talk about Kareem.
Mm-hmm. And I think he was a 19-time All-Star. He played longer than any of those guys. The only problem is I don't think he was likable. For some reason, people disliked him. I met him. He was very nice to me. That's all I can say. I met Will Chamberlain. He was great to me. But there's
something to what you just said right there, and we got to go to break here, but I appreciate you calling in, Rob. There's something to what you said, because I think that their personality and the cachet that Jordan had is completely different than Kareem's. So I do think that plays along to it sometimes. I think sometimes we forget about Kareem because he didn't have that personality. He wasn't that iconic logo that came with Nike. I think some of that happens. The one thing I will say about Kareem, this is one argument that I made with – I was making an argument with Ireland and with Michael Thompson. This was months ago. Maybe even it was a year ago, something like that. The one case that I made about Kareem was during that 80s Showtime era. Who was the best player on that team? And I think a lot of people would say it was Magic. So if you say it was Magic Johnson, there was no question who the best player was between Michael Jordan and Scottie Pippen. And I think Scottie Pippen's one of the more underrated players in the history of the NBA. But I think that's the one thing that I would say. The argument I would make is if Magic was the best player during that 80s Showtime era, and let's say it was just a hair better than Kareem Abdul-Jabbar, he was still better, where with Jordan and Pippen, there was no question. All right, we have Isabella Savala, who is a softball player from Brea Olinda High School. She's coming up next. We've been shouting out all these high school players, so I'm looking forward to doing that coming up next. Stay right here. This is the Sliwa Show on 710 ESPN.